information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care. And it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Hope is flickering. Hope is flickering. This is not change. This is more of the same. Welcome, my friends, to episode 110 of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network, your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, a positive drug story and another Minot mystery, the Super Bowl mind control, media memes and Simpsonsology, Cobra currency, zombie hackers, DTV, and the Obamasiah meets 9/11. It's all here. It's February 6th, 2009. It's episode 110 of MediaMonarchy.com.
And I want lots of money. I don't care about clever, I don't care about funny. I want loads of clothes and fuck loads of diamonds. I heard people die while they're trying to find them. And I'll take my clothes off and it will be shameless, cause everyone knows that's how you get famous. I'll look at the sun and I'll look in the mirror. I'm on the right track, yeah, I'm on to a winner. I don't know. And less about mothers. It's all about fast cars and cussing each other. But it doesn't matter, cause I'm packing plastic. And that's what makes my life so fucking fantastic. And I am a weapon of massive consumption. And it's not my fault, it's how I'm programmed to function. I look at the sun and I look in the mirror. I'm on the right track, yeah, we're on to a winner. I don't.
Here comes the fear again. That's the brand new single from Lily Allen from her new second record, It's Not Me, It's You, a deceptively subversive, seemingly vapid, catchy pop tune that's about the epidemic of vapid pop culture consumption. On the B-side episode last night of Media Monarchy 109, on the B-side we played The Fear. Different song, different band. But the fear is all around. We just got to dig a little deeper and see where that fear is coming from. That's what we're trying to do here. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, the site and the show. The show blasting out now live to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time, and also live on the worldwide home of free speech, revereradionetwork.com, 1 p.m. on the East Coast. And again, thanks to KBFR Boulder 93.9 for kicking out MediaMonarchy.com. And of course, get it, contact, spread the word, FaceBase, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, iTunes, Radio for All, and Archive.org. Just some of the many places you can find the media memes of Media Monarchy. And that's what we're going to try and focus on. The media and the memes and the mind control. The television. What I want to hit first, however, is a brief mention of my man Clyde Lewis and his show Ground Zero Lounge. That's, of course, recorded live every Monday night here in Portland. But you can, of course, podcast it, subscription links for you. I post up his show, and since I've been doing that, and since Clyde was a guest here on episode 100 a couple of months ago, posting up his shows, and he gives me some props and some thanks and some plugs, generally at the beginnings of the last several episodes of Ground Zero Lounge. So a big thankful appreciation to my man Clyde, who I'm going to get back in here soon. I don't want to do it too soon. I don't want to wear it out. I don't have that many guests here anyway. I think I've had 5 folks. But Clyde's going to be coming back, and I'm trying to line up some good interviews coming up. Got some good things planned. As a little taster for that, one little special thing, I made some Media Monarchy shirts that are for sale on cafepress.com. Made in America shirts, American apparel, white t-shirts with the MediaMonarchy.com logo on there. Get a shirt, spread the word. Get active, get radioactive. So once again, thanks to my man Clyde Lewis. His latest episode is up on MediaMonarchy.com as well as on IdeoCast.com. That's who carries his show. And of course, GroundZeroMedia.org. Latest episode I have posted up, Big Hairy Inaugural Balls. This, of course, going into the strange things heard and seen around the inauguration. They, of course, go more into the strange prayers and invocations and, of course, saying amen. Are you saying it to Amen, Ra, sun worship? However, a positive drug story. We closed last night's episode with the long, unseen, final censored appearance of Bill Hicks on Late Night with David Letterman. So hop back to the B-side to hear that final Bill Hicks clip. So speaking of Bill Hicks, the late Bill Hicks used to talk about a positive drug story. You never hear positive drug stories in the news. So when I do, I try and blast it out for you. What's turned into a strange positive drug story is this whole sort of course, a distraction, but a fun one and an interesting one and an important one. And that's, of course, the bong hit heard round the world, Michael Phelps. However, is this good? You now look at it and go, he's an amazing athlete, ripping bong hits. Phelps unites pot smokers.
People are always taking pictures of Michael Phelps, but he really caused a splash being photographed smoking a bong. In the time it takes to exhale, Phelps was being parodied, toking during a medal ceremony. What's the brand? And the iconic Wheaties box was transformed into a Wheaties t-shirt. There was late night applause at the mere mention of the deed.
Party taking a huge hit from a bong.
The bong incident seems to have brought the potheads out of the woodwork, particularly on the web. People seem to be high on Phelps.
Is he still a hero? Yeah, he's even more of a hero.
So we found out that Michael Phelps smokes pot, which is awesome.
It's even cooler that he can blaze and then do all that.
It's just cool to know that Superman can get high.
Yeah, well, it's cool to know Superman may also get charged for pot possession by county sheriff where the photo was taken.
Yeah, I just don't think you can have something like this done and publicized and say, I'm sorry, and then we're supposed to forget about it. He broke the law.
Or as one YouTuber put it,
you have to pay the piper.
Or at least pay for the pipe. On Facebook, fans established an I don't care that Michael Phelps smoked a bong page. Blogger Andrew Sullivan linked to the Stoned Olympics by comedian Eddie Izzard.
They start in Athens where a joint is lit. And then they run the 3 feet to the next athlete.
Meanwhile, on The View, Whoopi Goldberg made a confession.
Oh, I have smoked weed. I'm sorry. I have... Yeah! Suck it!
And Ashton Kutcher was twittering that though he hadn't smoked in quite some time, I bet Phelps can smoke a whole bowl in one breath. Swimmer's lungs. Some on the web were...
Angry.
That Phelps apologized.
All sorts of people are incredibly successful and have been known to smoke dope. Deal with it!
In Japan, they're dealing with it all right. A sumo wrestler was arrested for pot possession. The little guy slapping the bigger one. The pot arrest led to the sumo's dismissal. Don't try slapping around this guy.
Leave Michael Phelps alone.
Leave him alone.
Leave Michael Phelps alone.
Leave him alone with his air freshener. Jinimo CNN, New York.
Yeah, I would call that a positive drug story. The one update I have posted up, of course, there's bound to be more. Kellogg's has dropped Michael Phelps over the pot-smoking photo. Cereal and snack maker Kellogg Company says it will not renew its sponsorship contract with Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps because he has acknowledged smoking marijuana last fall. The Battle Creek, Michigan-based company said Thursday that Phelps' behavior caught on camera and published Sunday is not consistent with the image of Kellogg. The company put Phelps on boxes of its Frosted Flakes and Corn Flakes. Phelps has kept the backing of many sponsors since the photos surfaced that showed him inhaling from a marijuana pipe. Phelps' agent was not immediately available to comment. Kellogg says its contract with Phelps expired at the end of the month. Anyway... consistent with the image of Kellogg, hit the link to Food Navigator and read about how Kellogg teams up with Monsanto. And I believe originally Kellogg's in the early 20th century, perhaps even late 19th, tied into the whole hygienic movement. I believe they sold it as if you ate enough Kellogg's cornflakes, your boys wouldn't masturbate. Because that's bad. It's the bad touch. Let's keep moving through and to the media memes. However, let's get a little more serious. Not too much, though. Again, you know, I'm a Simpsons freakazoid. Anytime there's anything related, we'll bring it to you here. This is definitely related because we track Scientology, the cult of Scientology, on MediaMonarchy.com. Bart Simpson used to promote Scientology. Wikinews, which of course, being the open source that it is, they follow Scientology a lot. Nancy Cartwright, this is going back a few days, a few several days, Perhaps you've heard about this. Nancy Cartwright, 51, who is a longtime member of the Church of Scientology, has created a recording using her voice of Bart Simpson as part of a robocall promotion. The message surfaced two Wednesdays ago on, of course, YouTube.
Hey, what's happening, man? This is Bart Simpson. Just kidding. Don't hang up. This is Nancy Cartwright, and this is a very special phone call to you. I'm now auditing on new OT7 and have been asked to speak at the Flag World Tour event on January 31st in the Grand Ballroom at the Hollywood and Highland Center at 6:30 p.m. It's going to be a blast, man. I will be there to share my many wins as a solo NOS auditor and to see the Golden Era film presentation of Flag, the Mecca of Technical Perfection. I hope you can make it, man. To confirm for the Flag event, please call us back at 888-841-7131. That's 888-841-7131. See you there, man.
Cartwright stated that this is a special message and just announced a Scientology conference that was held at the Grand Ballroom, Hollywood and Highland Center in L.A., where she was speaking. So the message ended with a number to RSVP. The Simpsons executives did not authorize this usage of intellectual property in this manner. Executive producer Al Jean told the Hollywood Reporter, quote, "This is not authorized by us. The Simpsons does not and never has endorsed any religion, philosophy, or system of beliefs any more profound than Butterfinger bars." Referencing, of course, the advertisements featuring the Simpsons for the Butterfinger candy bar. Links in there for you. Of course, even the flashback links. Several months ago, many months ago on MediaMonarchy.com, Nancy Cartwright gave more money to Scientology than even John Travolta and Tom Cruise. Now, if you're a Simpsons fan, you'll realize the hilarious similarities between Nancy Cartwright with a recorded message for the pyramid scheme cult of Scientology. You'll notice the comparison between that and this.
Friend, do you wish to look as happy as me? Well, you've got the power inside you right now, so use it and send $1 to Happy Dude, 742 Evergreen Terrace, Springfield. Don't delay. Eternal happiness is just a dollar away.
Art imitates life, imitates crazy pyramid scheme cults. Moving on, however, to globalresearch.ca. Lights, camera, covert action. The deep politics of Hollywood. This is a long scholarly piece. I don't actually have the two authors' names posted up here, but you can hit the link and see the sources and see the entire article. I'm just going to give you the intro and outro, if you will. Wherein, here we build a prima facie case supporting the idea that Hollywood continues to be a target for infiltration and subversion by a variety of state agencies, in particular the CIA. Academic debates on cinematic propaganda are almost entirely retrospective, and whilst a number of commentators have drawn attention to Hollywood's long-standing and open relationship with the Pentagon, little of substance has been written about the more clandestine influences working through Hollywood in the post-9/11 world. As such, the work, this article, Lights, Camera, Covert Action, delves into the field of what Peter Dale Scott calls, of course, deep politics, namely, activities which cannot currently be fully understood due to the covert influence of shadowy power players. The article, of course, goes through some of the biggies and other massive things I can't even remember, but of course things like Pearl Harbor. That would be the Pentagon's involvement in the film of Pearl Harbor, which was, of course, playing in theaters. 9/11 happened, the new Pearl Harbor. But that's a sidebar. And we covered, I believe, the Transformers, of course, hand-in-hand with the Pentagon. And whether it's Top Gun or old Frank Capra films that you can watch on archive.org, Operation Hollywood has been going on for quite some time. So jumping down, many would recoil at the thought of modern Hollywood cinema being used as a propagandist tool, but the facts seem to speak for themselves. Do agencies such as the CIA have the power, like the Pentagon, to affect movie content by providing much sought-after expertise, locations, and other benefits? Or are they able to affect script changes through simple persuasion or even coercion? Do they continue to carry out covert actions in Hollywood as they did so extensively in the 50s and beyond cinema? Might covert government influence play some part in the creation of national security messages in TV series such as 24 and Alias? The star of The Lasser, Jennifer Garner, born in my home state of West Virginia, even made an unpaid recruitment video for the CIA. She's off the list. Again, as Bill Hicks would say, you're off the artistic roll call. The notion that covert agencies aspire to be more open is hard to take seriously when they provide such scant info about their role within the media, even regarding activities from decades past. The spy may have come in from the cold, but he continues to shelter in the shadows of the movie theater. I couldn't find the actual Jennifer Garner commercial, but there is a link to USA Today to read more about it. And, of course, a flashback to January 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com, where MSNBC clip talking about 24 as right-wing propaganda. Other links in there to DefenseLink.mil and even the aforementioned Operation Hollywood. Lights, camera, covert action, deep politics of Hollywood. A quick mention of an article from Alex Constantine that I have not gone through myself, but of course it speaks to all the foundation connections that folks like Webster Tarpley speak about. Profiles of America's Beloved TV Celebrities, Part 32. Bill Moyers as CIA liberal and the Nazi Joseph Campbell. Bill Moyers, of course, longtime connected media insider. But moving to editorandpublisher.com, leaving aside the Bill Moyers for the time being, check the article, but then also watch The Secret Government. From Editor and Publisher, however, Carlos Slim Steak, a danger to the New York Times. Basically, Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim loaned $250 million to keep the old gray lady afloat.
Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim is expanding his empire in the U.S. in a deal that could make him one of the largest shareholders of the New York Times Company. The Times is paying a hefty price for the $250 million investment, including an interest rate of 14%, and warrants that Slim could use to boost his stake in the company to 17%. Comcast, the nation's biggest cable TV operator, is being investigated by the FCC. At issue are concerns that it's giving preferential treatment to its phone service at the expense of similar services from competitors. Comcast last year changed the way it handles internet traffic after the FCC cracked down on its practice of delaying peer-to-peer file sharing.
So I left in, I know we're talking about Carlos Slim, but I left in the part about Comcast because I hate them so much. And they are my ISP at home. I was without internet this morning for about an hour, trying to put the finishing move on putting episode 110 together for you that I'm giving to you right now. No internet for about an hour, unplugging and rebooting and restarting the modems and yeah. So, of course, another black mark against Comcast. There you heard from the AP being investigated by the FCC. However, back to editor and publisher Carlos Slim Steak in New York Times is a danger. Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim's $250 million loan to the New York Times Company is an ominous move by a capitalist with loyalties to a foreign state, the Seattle Times said in an unsigned editorial Tuesday. Major media companies should not be in the hands of a capitalist with loyalties to a foreign state. The editorial states the paper's principal right in the headline. Again, unsigned. Newspaper ownership matters in American democracy. However, Slim has said he has no intention of using the loan, and an earlier purchase of a 6.5% stake in the Times Company to influence the paper's coverage or editorializing. Gobble it up. A bizarre note, as long as we're talking about connected elites and strange activities. Just the headline for you from the Associated Press. Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry and his wife are going to spend eternity in space. However, from USA Today, going to give you the latest on the coming Panopticon configuration, as my man Clyde Lewis called it on Ground Zero Lounge. Digital conversion deadline has now been bumped. As I note that I believe the PSYOP is growing around this. All the dots popping up. So first, from USA Today, they mention the deadline was supposed to be the 17th. Not going to happen now. That was when the nationwide switch to digital TV, and of course the $40 coupons and the converter boxes. There are many links in here to more from USA Today. Huffington Post, a breakdown, a fact on the digital conversion. ABC News, DTV.gov. And of course, the two episodes from Clyde Lewis about this coming Panopticon. However, from PCMag.com, the House has approved the digital TV transition delay. It's going to be a summertime transition. The House on Wednesday approved a bill to move the DTV transition from February 17th to June 12th by a vote of 264 to 158. The Senate approved the measure last week, so now it moves to the Obama-saya, who is expected, of course, to sign it into law.
February 17th was supposed to be the day when you would need one of these to keep watching over-the-air television using an antenna. Converter box to get digital signals after stations dropped analog. But the switch to digital is going to take more time. It looks like Congress is setting a new date, June 12th.
You mean I hit an 8?
Blame consumer confusion over what is needed to keep watching TV.
Bought that converter because they told us that's all we needed. It turns out it's not so simple.
A government program helping consumers cover the cost of converter boxes went broke. Here, it takes a coupon to get a box, but there is now a waiting list.
If you're using an antenna for your TV reception with an analog TV, you're the people that really need to take action to make sure that they're prepared.
People with sets connected to cable or satellite should keep seeing a picture. No box necessary. One estimate said almost 7 million people could see their sets go dark next month if something was not done to pull the plug on the digital switch. Lee Powell, The Associated Press.
Just tell me what I need to do to keep watching TV. This is, and again, give it up to Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero Lounge for calling the news before it happens. This is turning into quite the PSYOP. Because again, there's no way they're going to let millions of people get disconnected from the propaganda tit of television. There's some interesting Hegelian problem reaction solution shit going on. So we're going to see how this is going to shake out. However, the last story on this media memes posting, Simpsontology, Propaganda Log, and DTV, we've covered Bill Hicks and mentioned him many times, but How about George Carlin? From the Associated Press, FBI didn't keep tabs on alleged comedian Carlin's seven dirty words. Talk about irony. George Carlin spent decades pushing the bounds of free speech by saying the seven words you can never say on television, but not one of them made it into an FBI file on him. Among the 12 pages in a file recently released by Carlin's family are a couple of letters from outraged citizens who complained that the comedian had made fun of the FBI and its director, J. Edgar Hoover, during TV appearances in 1969 and 70. There's also a letter from Hoover himself thanking one of Carlin's critics for defending his honor, and an internal FBI memo that quotes the director as saying, "What do we know of Carlin?" Not much, as it turned out. The memo notes the FBI has, quote, no data concerning Carlin, other than the two letters from his critics. Which kind of disappoints me, laughed Carlin's daughter, Kelly Carlin McCall, who provided the files to the Associated Press. It doesn't really cover any of his more radical 70s stuff, she said. If you read further, they refer to him as an alleged comedian, which is great. Should have been an album title. We're getting darker now. Still diving into the media memes, the television tit. And of course, we just had the Super Bowl. We covered, of course, last week, the behavior detection officers that were deployed at the Super Bowl. Of course, we've had them in some of the major airports, and of course, we learned it from the Israelis. I, of course, didn't watch it, but fortunately, the important things come out, and people post them online, so I don't have to weed through all the shit. Super Bowl ad jokes that TV turns your brain into mind-controlled mush. A bizarre commercial that aired on the Super Bowl depicts Alec Baldwin talking about, you know, how TV's designed to turn people's brains to mush so they're easily controlled, and that reptilian aliens are behind the operation to do this.
Hello, Earth. I'm Alec Baldwin, TV star. You know, they say TV will rot your brain. That's absurd. TV only softens the brain like a ripe banana to take all the way. We've created Hulu. Hulu beams TV directly to your portable computing devices, giving you more of the cerebral gelatinizing shows you want anytime, anywhere, for free.
I only hang out because I want you alone. God almighty!
Mushy mush. And the best part is there's nothing you could do to stop it. I mean, what are you going to do, turn off your TV and your computer? Once your brains are reduced to a cottage cheese like mush, we'll scoop them out with a melon baller and gobble them right on up. Oops, I think I'm drooling a little. Because we're aliens, and that's how we roll. Hulu, an evil plot to destroy the world. Enjoy.
In your face, propaganda. And sure, it's satirical and funny, and it's meant to be a joke, and Alec Baldwin's great. But it's in-your-face propaganda that you're a weapon of mass consumption dumbass. Laughing at you while you're in the stupor watching the bowl. Links in there to read an article from my man Alex Ansari from here in Portland, Oregon, Outside the Box. He wrote an article a couple years ago that went viral, and it's all over the place. And it's about television as mass mind control. The other link, of course, is to read about the reptilian humanoid conspiracy theories referenced therein. However, many related updates swirled around this. First, from the Telegraph. Too much TV can make children mentally ill. Excessive exposure makes a child materialistic, which in turn affects their relationship with their parents and their health. That's one of the conclusions of a new wide-ranging survey into British childhood produced for the Children's Society. It says that children are part of a new form of consumerism, with under 16-year-olds spending £3 billion per year of their own money on clothes, snacks, music, games, and magazines. The report claims that some advertisers, quote, explicitly exploit the mechanism of peer pressure while painting parents as buffoons. And that in its most extreme form, advertising persuades children that, quote, you are what you own. Many links in there to childrenssociety.org.uk, where you can read some of the abstracts. However, they are selling this as a book. Too much TV can make children mentally ill. That goes right along with the Alec Baldwin Super Bowl ad joking that TV turns your brain into mind-controlled mush. Life imitates art. Imitates the Super Bowl being interrupted by porn in Arizona. From the Associated Press, a Tucson television station says its broadcast of the Super Bowl was interrupted for some customers by about 10 seconds of porno. NBC affiliate KVOA-TV in Tucson posted a statement on its website late Sunday saying the only viewers who were able to see the material were those who received the channel through Comcast cable. Another smooth Comcast move. KVOA says it will investigate the incident and that the game was sent out from the station without interruptions or pornographic material. Link to KVOA. And the flashback link to May 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com, Disney Channel porn. And I have to say, for better or worse, it's one of the more trafficked entries on MediaMonarchy.com. But hopefully, that gets them in, and then they start to explore. Another one from Danger Room. Army recruiting cheerleaders for the Afghanisurge. Football season's officially over, which means there are a whole lot of cheerleaders looking for gigs. Good thing the U.S. Army needs a, quote, professional NFL cheerleader troop to tour Afghanistan in April. Link to FBO.gov, and you can apply for that job. A cheerleader in Afghanistan, you know what? George Bush should do that. Finally, tying it all together, bailed out Bank of America sponsors Super Bowl Fun Fest.
President Obama's tough talk last week was aimed in large part at the Bank of America, which now has $45 billion in taxpayers' money to keep it in business. But the outrage and the bailout money didn't stop the bank from going ahead with spending millions of dollars as one of the corporate sponsors of the NFL, entitling its executives this Super Bowl weekend to lavish parties and a luxury suite at the game itself.
It's over and away.
Bank of America refused to say how much it is spending as an NFL corporate sponsor. But insiders say the figure is close to $10 million. For its money, the bank got the use of a luxury suite of seats to watch the big game. And invitations to what was a round of extravagant parties the NFL throws to reward its corporate sponsors. The bank refused to reveal the names of the executives who were in Tampa, invited to enjoy the martinis and the music and the luxury suite at the game.
They should be giving it to the people that own part of that bank, and that's the American people.
The bank spent even more, it won't say how much, to sponsor a carnival-like affair outside the stadium called the NFL Experience.
Welcome to the NFL Fan Experience presented by Bank of America, the Bank of Opportunity.
The bank says its NFL partnerships and product tie-ins generate significant revenue streams, and that it was legally required to fulfill its contract to be an NFL sponsor. A leading congressional critic says nonsense.
They should know better. But obviously they don't. And so the Congress is going to have to take some type of action.
And the congressman was just as upset about what was going on earlier last week in Palm Beach. This five-star oceanfront resort, The Breakers, was the setting for a three-day conference for clients put on by Morgan Stanley. The bank, which laid off 5,000 employees last year and took $10 billion in taxpayer bailout money. Morgan Stanley would not say what this elegant gathering cost, but says it is an annual tradition and that its clients paid their own travel costs and got a discounted room rate of $400 a night.
Most people in my block, that would be half of a mortgage payment. a monthly mortgage payment, $400.
Two different worlds, Main Street and Wall Street. What seems like chump change for an investment banker can make all the difference for millions of other Americans struggling to stay afloat. By the way, General Motors is also a corporate sponsor of the NFL, but it says, in light of its financial struggles, not a single executive from GM went to the games or the parties.
GM got it. Others
they
did
got
not.
It. Others did not.
All right, Brian. Thanks so much.
And that's how a yearly custom became an annual tradition. Banksters and gangsters will always party. And now it's just going to get strange. This video, even just up for a short amount of time, got a bit of attention. And folks that I know and people that I work with, they were talking about it and telling people and other people were watching it. Because if you were of a certain age, you probably grew up watching tons of this show, as I did. Perhaps watching so much of this show somehow tuned me into all the crazy military entertainment complex memes were going on. From Frank Lordy, from RevelationsMedia.com. We've made mention of him before because he's also the one behind the fantastic Project Bluebeam and a fake rapture video, of course, going over the PSYOP, the War of the Worlds, the military technology to beam messiahs into the sky and into your brain. And that's, I think, what's growing. And I know that's something that others have been trying to keep an eye on. Keep an eye on all the interesting sort of alien, UFO, extraterrestrial, life on Mars talk going on. And just see the little ideas here and there. So that's what the Project Bluebeam is about. Some massive Orson Welles-like War of the Worlds PSYOP, which I believe, given the technology we have now, could be even bigger and better than War of the Worlds. It would literally be the greatest show on Earth. So Frank Lordy made that Project Bluebeam video. However, he's working on a new documentary. It's called Mindbender. Within this, Cobra Commander offers you a financial bailout.
Attention, citizens! Due to the financial irresponsibility and incompetence of your leaders, Cobra has found it necessary to restructure your nation's economy. We have begun by eliminating the worthless green paper, which your government has deceived you into believing is valuable. Cobra will come to your rescue, and out of the ashes will arise a new order!
Citizens of the United States, I am pleased to announce Cobra's economic recovery plan. If you want money to buy food for your children, take all your valuables to the nearest branch of Extensive Enterprises. There, all goods will be exchanged for Cobra currency.
Running low on cash? Can't afford groceries? Have no fear. The Federal Reserve, the NWO, and Cobra Commander have teamed up to offer you and your loved ones your very own economic stimulus package. Sick of hearing about Wall Street getting bailed out? Well, your worries are over. This financial rescue is custom made for Main Street. Cobra currency in the form of the Amero. Coming soon. That's trailer number 2 for Mindbender, forthcoming from RevelationsMedia.com. There's another trailer, that one you got to watch for yourself. Mindbender, G.I. Joe and the War on Terror. Trailers to the documentary, where basically events from 9/11 unfold in a cartoon from 1985. The War on Terror in cartoon form from 20 years ago. If you watch that trailer, you'll see jets flying towards the World Trade Center. Shadowy terrorist organizations hiding in caves. But I'm getting ahead of myself. That clip with the Cobra Commander voice, I have not confirmed, but I believe that that's really from a G.I. Joe episode. That's not an altered, catchy, you know, remix, redo. So there it is. When your supposed leaders fail you and things collapse, when they break your back and break the currency, you can just be assimilated into the new fold. We covered it last night. Iceland, now, of course, to be fast-tracked into the EU. Of course, after their economy and their back was broken, months of protest, unrest, assimilated. As our phony economy collapses on purpose, we'll clamor, do something. And they will. They'll offer a new currency. Again, getting ahead of myself, this is just a little bit of a teaser from Mindbender. Predictive programming media memes. G.I. Joe and the War on Terror. We will get more into this as time goes by. Something like this really intrigues me. Again, as I say, growing up, playing and watching G.I. Joes, which seems abhorrent to me now. So look out for more from Frank Lordy and Mindbender and revelationsmedia.com. Another funny one, and a monkey wrenching of the New World Order. More pranks. We need more pranks. Sign jamming, billboard jamming. Sign hackers broadcast zombie warnings. This originally from the Austin American Statesman. Someone reprogrammed two city construction road signs near the University of Texas early Monday morning in an attempt to warn Austin of an imminent zombie attack.
Don't adjust your television. What you're seeing is real. Kind of. Hackers broke into a City of Austin road sign and changed the public safety message to warn drivers of zombies ahead. Of course, plenty of people got a laugh out of that prank.
Many others didn't think it was funny at all. Shannon Wolfson, live in Central Austin with tonight's top story.
Robert and Leslie, count the City of Austin among those who didn't think this prank. Oh, these signs are all back to normal now, but take a look at how they read just a couple of days ago. Imagine your normal morning commute, moving along just fine, and then you come to this.
We were pretty surprised. We thought it was pretty funny, so we decided to go back and take more pictures of it.
UT student Jane Shin was driving with some friends late Sunday night.
We were driving down MLK and Lamar, and we saw those signs. It said Nazi zombies ahead.
You heard that right. The signs warned of Nazi zombies. Run, they read, and the end is near. Some drivers even slowed down, thinking perhaps their eyes were deceiving them.
This is definitely a first. Some people find that the content of the sign was amusing, but the big problem is public safety. Those signs are out there to help our traffic on the roadways to stay safe.
The hacked signs on Lamar near MLK traditionally warn drivers of construction ahead, not zombies. And they're usually locked, but the hackers cut through the padlock.
There is a computer inside those signs that is password protected. And so they had to break in and hack into the computer to do it. So they were pretty determined.
The city doesn't own the signs. Contractor doing the construction work does. And the messages were only up for a few hours.
We thought it was pretty funny. We wondered who did it. It could be a serious problem because, like, if you change signs like that, people might not know where to go, and it's pretty a dangerous issue, and people need to take things seriously.
Jane Shin thought it was funny at first, but realizes now what can happen when zombies, or hackers, attack.
All kidding aside, this is a crime. It is a Class C misdemeanor in Texas. What is disturbing, we discovered in our research for this report, is that there are actually websites out there that tell people exactly how to do this. The city says they will consult with the manufacturer of these signs to make something like this more difficult in the future. And by the way, they are still looking for those responsible. We're live in Central Austin tonight. Shannon Wolfson, KSAN, Austin News.
Zombie.
The drivers, they might have been amused by these hash signs, but as Shannon Wolfson tells us, city officials, not so much.
Imagine your normal morning commute, moving along just fine, and then you come to this.
We were pretty surprised. We thought it was pretty funny, so we decided to go back and take some more pictures of it.
UT student Jane Shin was driving with some friends late Sunday night.
We were driving down MLK and Lamar, and we saw those signs. It said Nazi zombies ahead.
You heard that right. The signs warned of Nazi zombies. Run, they ran, and the end is near. Some drivers even slowed down, thinking perhaps their eyes were deceiving them.
This is definitely a first. Some people find that the content of the sign was amusing, but the big problem is public safety. Those signs are out there to help our traffic on the roadways to stay safe.
The hacked signs on Lamar near MLK traditionally warn drivers of construction ahead, not zombies, and they're usually locked. But the hackers cut through the padlock.
There's a computer inside those signs, just password protected. And so they had to break in and hack into the computer to do it, so they were pretty determined.
The city doesn't own the signs. The contractor doing the construction work does. And the messages were only up for a few hours.
We thought it was pretty funny. We wondered who did it. It could be a serious problem, because, like, if you change signs like that, people might not know where to go, and it's a dangerous issue, and people need to take it thing seriously.
Jane Shin thought it was funny at first, but realizes now what can happen when zombies or hackers attack.
Hacking to computers is a Class C misdemeanor in Texas, but I'll bet you knew that. The city says it will consult with the manufacturer to make something like this more difficult in the future.
Think zombie hackers attacked that clip and made it play something twice and then have a bunch of music at the end. Sign hackers broadcast zombie warnings. So, of course, any kind of pranks are fun. However, it would have been better if they would have said, 9/11 was an inside job, or in the Fed, or papers, please. Nazi checkpoint ahead. Something a little more cutting, but we'll take what we can get. Sign hackers broadcasting zombie warnings. And that reminds me of the flashback link to, again, January of 2007, the Aqua Teen bomber scare. If you recall the promotions for the Aqua Teen movie, where they placed these strange-looking lit-up devices that had some of the characters from the show, that, of course, people thought were bombs, and it was a big, huge ordeal. The funnier part was when the guys who were to blame did the press conference. They, of course, couldn't talk about anything, because it was, of course, going to go to trial. Or at least, it was under investigation. Their lawyers had advised them not to speak, is what I'm trying to say. So all they talked about were famous hairstyles of the 70s. You should dig back and check that out. I want more media monkey wrenching. Seat of the pants. The flipping of the script. The taking back of the control. Not advocating anything illegal. Just creative. I believe, oh no, there'll be more about media, more about television, coming up a little later. However, one of the biggest stories in a while on MediaMonarchy.com, a lot of traffic, And as you know, as we go over at the end of every episode, the list of the strange visitors to MediaMonarchy.com that I track, you can see what's an interesting story by what kind of traffic it brings your way. In the case of the story we're about to go over, it of course brought the spooks out of the woodwork. Captain Jonathan Bayless, B-A-Y-L-E-S-S, Captain Jonathan Bayless, another Minot Air Force Base death. For several months, we've been watching the misdeeds and wondering what the hell is going on at the Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. It, of course, being the origin of the rogue B-52s that flew six, or was it five, nuclear warheads across the country to Barksdale in Louisiana. Of course, one of the bases Bush hopscotched to on 9/11. They sent some fuses to Taiwan. One of their nuclear crews were busted sleeping on the job. There was a missile in a ditch. On and on and on. Many people associated with the nuclear fighter B-52 squadron of the Minot Air Force Base have died. They've had a nasty habit of dying young in car accidents. The links are all throughout this story, and you can read more about the history and the backstory. There's a good little two-part video from Webster Tarpley talking about the rogue B-52s. However, to the case at hand, the body of a missile combat crew commander from the Minot Air Force Base was found by police, and the cause of his death is under investigation, the Air Force says. A statement issued by the base last Sunday said the body of Captain Jonathan Bayless, age 28, was found Friday, January 30th, in the evening. Police did not at the time give details, but said it was in an area north of the city soccer complex, and they are awaiting autopsy results. Colonel Christopher Ayres, A-Y-R-E-S, the base's 91st Missile Wing commander, said Bayless was a training chief with the 91st Operations Support Squadron. He had been at Minot since March 2005. Bayless went on active duty in May 2003. Base officials did not list his hometown, but said he had been assigned earlier to Vandenberg Air Force Base for missile combat crew member training. The 91st Missile Wing has lost not only a valuable member of our team, but a member of our family, and he will be missed, Colonel Christopher Ayres said in the statement. The Air Force said casualty assistance officers and unit members are helping Bayless's family, and a memorial service is being planned. Captain Jonathan Bayless, another mysterious Minot Air Force Base death.
A missile combat crew commander at Minot Air Force Base was found dead in North Minot late Friday night. Captain Jonathan Bayless had been on active duty at the base since March of 2005, and according to friends who we talked to, had become an active member of a church and of the community in general in Minot. Sang in the Heritage Singers, a men's chorus that's performed in the Minot area for decades. One of his fellow singers says the news of the death of Captain Bayless came as a big shock to members of the Heritage Singers.
You know, he was a gentleman, quiet, but he is very talented. He was kind and considerate of others. We enjoyed him in the group. He was, of course, he sang first tenor, so you can't get much better than that.
Andrews is a first tenor himself in the group. The exact cause of Captain Bayless's death has not been determined in autopsy.
The friend there seems to be speaking quite lightly of a guy who just died. Oh, he's a pretty good tenor. That video was swiped by me and posted up to youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. Another Minot mysterious death. Links in that story, like I said, you can run searches and read more about the rogue B-52s and missile combat crew commanders. There are some appropriate searches in there as more spills out about Captain Jonathan Bayless on Google. KXMC.com, as well as MinotDailyNews.com, the Minot Air Force Base itself. Again, KXMC. However, from Cryptogon.com, in his posting, and actually, hat tip to him and credit to him, I swiped his headline, Captain Jonathan Bayless, another Minot Air Force Base death, from Cryptogon.com. The 91st Missile Wing is a U.S. Air Force strategic nuclear missile unit. They deal with the Minuteman III ICBMs. Cryptogon has added this obituary, this mention, this death of Captain Bayless to Cryptogon's Minot Air Force Base Nuke Master Death List. Dare we look at this list? Starting at the top, we do dare. We're diving into the fear. Remember the one about the B-52 bomber that, according to legend, had six nuclear weapons loaded onto it by accident, which of course could not have happened by accident for a dozen different reasons or more? Airman First Class Todd Blue was assigned to the unit that provides security for that bomber wing at Minot. He died while on leave in Virginia. Coincidence. Was he on duty when those nuclear weapons were loaded onto the B-52 by accident? If anyone has further information, let somebody know. And again, this back in September 2007, Cryptogon notes that he expects to see probably more deaths around Minot and Barksdale. Then, jumping to the aforementioned KXMC, authorities investigated the death of Minot Air Force Base airman who died while on leave in Virginia, 20-year-old Todd Blue. But then we jump to Caddo deputies work double fatality accident. This is from ShreveportTimes.com, September 15th, 2007. Sheriff's deputies worked a wreck in which two people from Barksdale Air Force Base were killed. The two were riding a 2007 Harley-Davidson motorcycle with the husband driving and the wife the passenger. Traveling behind, a northbound Pontiac Aztec driven by Erica Jerry. Jerry initiated a left turn into a business parking lot. At the same time, the man driving the motorcycle attempted to pass the van on the left in a no-passing zone. They collided. The woman passenger on the motorcycle died at the scene while the husband was taken to the hospital where he died. Authorities identify Minot airman killed in crash, July 5th, 2007. Authorities identified a Minot Air Force Base man killed in a crash on the outskirts of Minot. Base officials say 20-year-old Adam Bars, B-A-R-R-S, was a passenger in a vehicle that failed to negotiate a curve, hit an approach, hit a tree, and started on fire. Bars was pronounced dead at the scene. July 20th, 2007, bomber pilot killed in crash. A Minot Air Force Base bomber pilot was killed in a motorcycle crash in Tennessee, the base says. First Lieutenant Weston Kissel, K-I-S-S-E-L, 28 years old, was a B-52 pilot assigned to the 23rd Bomb Wing at the Minot base. September 10th, 2007. Dateline, Portland, Oregon. Body of missing Air Force captain found. The body of a missing Air Force captain from Florida has been found near Badger Park in northeast Skamania County, Washington, Portland police said. Acting on a tip from Portland police, Skamania County authorities found Captain John Frueh, F-R-U-E-H. They found Captain John Frueh's rental car. They started a search and rescue with the help of dogs, found his body. Foul play was not suspected. From the Associated Press, U.S. Air Force General Thomas L. Tinsley, T-I-N-S-L-E-Y, dead from gunshot wound to the chest. The officer who commands an Air Force wing in Alaska died of a gunshot wound that was likely self-inflicted. Brigadier General Thomas L. Tinsley suffered a gunshot wound to his chest, pronounced dead within a half hour. Mosley, the Air Force military chief, and Air Force Secretary Michael W. Wynne, W-Y-N-N-E, the agency's civilian head, were held accountable for failing to fully correct an erosion of nuclear-related performance standards. One concern was a cross-country flight in August of a B-52 carrying armed nuclear weapons. And then, to the most recent. Captain Jonathan Bayless, another Minot Air Force Base death. You can be assured we're going to follow this story and follow the trail. Unfortunately, in this case, we're following a body trail and not a money trail, but perhaps that's out there somewhere as well. Again, I implore you to check out the two-part Tarpley clip that dives into this and gives you a nice, good intro to the whole Rogue B-52 case. Flashbacks, all to MediaMonarchy.com, as we've been tracking corrupt Minot for quite some time now. We've got 70 punished in accidental nuke flight. Of course, we just referenced that. One of those guys, of course, then killed himself. October 2007, 70 punished in accidental nuke flight. Nuclear missile crew fell asleep on duty. That's from July 2008. And that video on youtube.com/MediaMonarchy is one of my most watched. The sleeping nuclear missile crew. Why not Minot? North Dakota towns unfazed by ICBM rocket. It was laying in the ditch. That's from August 2008. And then the final flashback to September of 2008. More Minot, lost launch devices, sexual abuse, and tampering. Something is rotten in the state of North Dakota. I already said it. I'll say it again. We're going to watch Minot and try and connect the dot. Something's also rotten in the state of Oregon, and we're going to get to that. However, let's get a little more fear music. There goes the fear. doves. There goes the fear. If you're keeping track, that's our third fear-based song. That's Doves. We heard Lily Allen, and last night on the B-side, we heard Pulp, all with songs called The Fear. We're well into hour number two of episode 110 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's February 6th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live every Friday morning from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and revereradio.net. And again, thanks to KBFR in Boulder, 93.9. I said something is rotten in the state of Oregon. And wouldn't you know it, it's the military. Navy unleashes tug of war off Oregon coast. This from the Oregonian. You may not realize it, but the Navy's been conducting warfare training exercises off the coast of Oregon, Washington, and Northern California for decades, firing missiles and machine guns, dropping bombs, and practicing crucial sonar detection of submarines. Now, the Navy's Northwest region wants to expand those operations, including adding a dummy minefield avoidance training course, scheduling hundreds more training flights and warfare simulations over land and sea. And of course, increasing the use of sonar, a potential threat to endangered and threatened whales and other marine mammals, which we've gone over many, many times. Environmental groups, fishermen, and some politicians among Oregon's coast, or rather along Oregon's coast, are wary. They also say the military sprang the 1,000-page environmental review of its training plan with little notice. The Navy held one Oregon meeting on the draft proposal last week, and comments are due 2 days ago. Activists, however, want a 30-day extension. For the whole state of Oregon, there was one 90-minute meeting, said Marie Gargano, a Depot Bay retiree active in environmental issues. It just looks like a pro forma effort to meet the requirements of the law. Links in this story to NWT Range Complex EIS, as well as the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, Salem News, OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting. However, the important part, the massive part, the 1,000-page environmental review from the military dropped with little notice. Volume one of this environmental impact statement is 30 megs, and volume two is 8 megs. Two PDFs you can download. I know that the jets flying overhead in Portland has massively increased in the last several weeks. Every other day on the front of the newspaper, it's Black Hawk helicopters training to go to war. But they're training here. And of course, we had the black helicopters over Portland for DOD terror drills just last August. They're training off the coast. As I've said again and again, they're practicing to take over your cities. Or maybe in this case, your boats or your mammals. There is a long story, and this is going to keep going, though. So, again, hit the link up to the Oregonian. Their story, Navy plan to increase warfare training off Oregon coast draws objections. An interesting related story to this. 10 years ago, the saga of the new Carissa began on the Oregon coast. This, again, from local K-A-T-U, I believe that's the ABC station here. The woodchip freighter New Carissa ran aground off the coast of Oregon on February 4th, 1999, the start of what was heralded at the outset as a straightforward salvage job and turned into a nearly decade-long shipwreck saga featuring explosions, lawsuits, and cable cars. The timeline is put up on K2, but it also comes from the Oregon Department of State Lands website, as well as some other stations. You can follow the timeline from February 4th, 1999. Lots of amazing photos and explosions. And of course, it begs the question, when you put it side by side with military training off the coast, you get the idea. Navy unleashes tug of war off the Oregon coast. So you can bet I will be watching that. One thing I should mention right now, haven't had a chance to post it up on the site. I'm a little behind on all the Enviro Health attacks and Bill Gates letting a jar full of mosquitoes loose for showy effect. And of course, the black helicopter military war game terror drills going down in New Orleans. As if they need that. So we're gonna get all that. So needless to say, I'm gonna be watching closely and listening. Now, of course, the Portland International Airport is near the city, PDX. So you hear and can kind of see jets taking off. However, there's no mistaking when you hear the military jets flying overhead. They're deafening. And it somehow doesn't make me feel safe. Or safer. Oh, we do have a little sound bite. Let's listen to the Navy talking about Oregon and talking about the decibels.
Some of the activities like sonar activities with levels of 235 decibels dramatically exceed the levels that the National Marine Fisheries Service typically allows, say, the seismic industry to expose marine mammals to, which is 160 dB.
It kind of sounded like, Noam Chomsky in a submarine. But you get the idea. Navy unleashes tug of war off the coast of Oregon. But as long as, like I said, we're talking about planes and military planes and wondering why they're there or wondering where they are, brings us, of course, to latest 9/11 updates. Jimmy Carter says yes, and so should you. From Anthony the Activist. Members of We Are Change Ohio, wearechangeohio.com, they got a chance to meet up with the former president, Jimmy Carter, while he was in Chicago on his latest book signing tour. They asked him if he would support the victims' family members' demand for a new investigation into 9/11. They, of course, took into consideration that Carter was under the advisement of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was a key contributor to the Taliban, among other things. However, Carter has been very critical of the Bush administration for years and stated that at least Bush, he has at least stated that Bush exploited 9/11. So We Are Change Ohio figured there'd be no harm in asking him. Of course, getting video and getting good audio is always a hard thing, and seeing Jimmy Carter doing book signings at a Costco is a little bizarre. However, Jimmy Carter says yes.
Real quick question, if you don't mind. I was just wondering if you'd support the victims' family members that wanted an investigation in 9/11, considering now we're
at another investigation?
Yeah, at the end of 9/11. Would you support it?
Your books are down there.
Sir?
Yeah, I don't have anything to do with it, but I'm sure it would be, it'd be nice. But
sir, thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
How many books do you have?
I'll admit, not the strongest endorsement. yeah, I wouldn't have anything to do with it, but sure. Go nuts. However, hopefully, we've not heard the last of this. And that's just a little taster for what we're going to get to in just a couple minutes when the Obama-Saya meets 9/11. However, jumping to The Gothamist, and of course, following the story as the hubbub grows around Rescue Me, and how they're working 9/11 conspiracy theories into its plot. Word has, of course, leaked out that in an episode for the upcoming season of the FX firefighter drama Rescue Me, the womanizing fireman Franco, one of the show's main characters, espouses theories that 9/11 was an inside job carried out as part of a neoconservative plot to change the definition of preemptive attack and control the world's oil. The New York Times says that it marks the first fictional presentation of 9/11 conspiracy theories by a mainstream media company. Star of the show, Dennis Leary, says that the scene is not far off from scenes in actual firehouses, where some of the younger members don't even have to completely buy into the theory of 9/11 being an inside job, but want to discuss it. What's more striking than the fictional plot is that the show is using the real-life conspiracy beliefs of the actor who plays Franco, Daniel Sinjata. They've got him promoting the storyline. In a press tour, Sinjata has said that he is, quote, absolutely 100% supports the assertion that 9/11 was indeed an inside job. From what I believe we know, and as we've been tracking Daniel Sinjata coming out for 9/11 Truth over the last couple years now, I believe it's thanks to him in no small part that this has become a storyline in Rescue Me. Now, of course, art imitating life, imitating politics, and sometimes, of course, without a shred of irony, we jump to Fox News. Of course, now FX owning Rescue Me, FX still being Rupert Murdoch News Corp. So, irony aside, Fox hosts, of course, say that 9/11 truthers are mentally ill.
Let's talk a little bit about a Gregalog you did regarding a show on FX cable channel, and it's all about character.
Apparently, it's the first show ever to tackle 9/11 conspiracies in a fictional episode. It was Rescue Me, the show about firefighters with Dennis Leary. There's a character in it who goes by the Daniel Sinjata, is the actor. He plays Franco Rivera. He believes that it was 9/11 was a preemptive strike by a neoconservative government. I think that means Bush. Mm-hmm. And it's what angers me about this is that people are treating it with respect. The New York Times wrote a piece about it. They interviewed the producer. The producer described the actor. The actor believes this stuff, that the actor is well-read and very passionate about it. They say this about conspiratorialists all the time, but they never say these people are idiots, they're mentally ill, they shouldn't be treated with respect. It's an insult to people who were victims of 9/11 and their families. It's an insult to firefighters. I am surprised that they're doing this.
Especially Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
To lose firefighters by fire trucks and
it makes no sense to me why he would do this, because he's a smart guy.
So this episode has already aired.
No, it hasn't aired yet. I think this is going to be the last season of Rescue Me. And I think the reason why they're doing this is to generate just publicity, which is working. But the thing, it just drives me nuts to say that somebody, just because you're passionate about something, you're right. Mark David Chapman was passionate about the Beatles, and what he did was horrible. So just because you believe in something doesn't make it right. And people are too scared to confront 9/11 conspiracies because it's like the crazy guy in the subway. You don't want to make eye contact. But sooner or later, you got to make eye contact, and you got to tell that guy to get lost.
Right. Or just let him sleep on the plastic bag.
I prefer to sleep.
Well, Rosie O'Donnell is the only other person who you won't make eye contact with. He also believes it was in...
This guy, they're friends. This guy actually makes her sound almost sane. And you know what's great is they also say these people are well-read. What that means is they actually read the same crazy books. It's a self-perpetuating conspiracy. The conspiracy theorist reads other conspiracy theories.
Greg, I got bad news. You just got you going, and now you got to go back to bed.
I know.
Check him out on Red Eye each and every night right here on the Fox News Show. Greg Gutfeld, thank you.
My pleasure.
No, I don't think we'll check that out. But again, no shred of irony or even realization that they're ragging on something owned by the same multinational corporation that owns them and pointing fingers. But again, that's how all the phony left-right this and that all lean against each other and keep them propped up, and then we can't knock them down because they lean up against each other. So those were the fools on Fox talking about, of course, Rescue Me and Daniel Sinjata. There are, of course, other links in there, and we'll get to some of those flashback links. However, another new bit, as if we didn't know this, and of course, no help for them, no bailout for them. 9/11 lung problems persist years later. This is from Thursday, February 5th, 2009, from the Associated Press. Researchers tracking September 11th responders who became ill after working at the World Trade Center site found many had lung problems years later in a study the author said proves persistent illness in people exposed to toxic dust caused by the Twin Towers collapse. The study by the Mount Sinai Medical Center's Medical Monitoring Program examined more than 3,000 responders between 04 and 07, repeating exams conducted between the middle of 02 and 04. Slightly more than 24% of the patients had abnormal lung function, the study found. In the earlier examinations, about 28% of the patients had similar results. We know people we are following are still sick. It's confirming what we've been seeing clinically, said Dr. Jacqueline M. Moline, who treats ailing responders and co-authored the study. Experts have struggled since the 2001 attacks to find standards to define post-September 11th illness and the time it would take to develop. The city's medical examiner recently added to the official victims list a man who died in October of cancer and lung disease, citing his exposure to the dust cloud that enveloped the city when 110-story towers collapsed. Mount Sinai's program has treated more than 26,000 people who were at the site or worked there in the days after 9/11. The study's authors note that the participants asked to be enrolled in the program and may have more health problems than others who were exposed but didn't enroll. But Norman H. Edelman, chief medical officer of the American Lung Association, said the study is probably an important finding of long-term post-9/11 illness. The most reasonable explanation is that there's a subset of people who, for whatever reason, were more sensitive to the stuff that was inhaled. The researchers tracked 3,160 people who took follow-up exams between September 2004 and December 07. All had the aforementioned previous exams at least 18 months earlier. All of this appears in the new edition of CHEST, a journal published by the American College of Chest Physicians. Links in there to chestjournal.com. The flashbacks, first to April 2007, Rescue Me Star comes out on 9/11, and then just recently, Rescue Me character believes 9/11 was an inside job, and so does the actor playing him. That was, of course, when we played the clip from the episode where he lays it all out to the journalist doing a 9/11 retrospective at the firehouse in the fictional world of Rescue Me. That sets the table now, and I've glanced at Google News. However, I don't see any update. I'm sure, unfortunately, it all went quickly and without a peep, although I was hoping for more. But now, having already said that, let's glance at Google News and see what's up. And of course, it's nearly 600,000 jobs lost in January. And of course, making progress on stimulus. And of course, the sort of sideshow, I don't want to say freak show, but it's that sideshow circusy kind of story that's always kind of hanging out on the side that, of course, now is going to bring up more and more the ideas that we're going to be getting into. And that's, of course, population control and eugenics. And it ties in, of course, with the mother of the octuplets and that she already had six kids. And did they monkey with her to make her have too many kids and all the ethical questions this might raise? And of course, as we went over last night on the B-side 109, the UK green guru talking about a two-child policy. Of course, you know, that's one more than China's one-child policy. Elsewhere on Google News, Obama announces new economic recovery board. CIA should fire official accused of rape. We covered that last night on the B-side. Of course, the CIA agent accused of rape in Algeria. Well, I don't see any updates. I'll have to dig a little later for you. However, we know, according to the Washington Post, as well as the Associated Press, and on, McClatchy, and more, Obama to meet with victims and relatives of the 9/11 attacks that happened this morning, February 6th, 2009. But from last night, from the Washington Post, President Obama will gather tomorrow, that's today, with victims and families of the 9/11 terrorist attacks and the USS Cole bombing for a face-to-face meeting as, of course, his administration struggles to decide how to handle detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, several of those invited said. The previously undisclosed meeting at the White House will give the new president a chance to explain his decision to close the controversial prison facility where the U.S. has placed many suspected terrorists since 9/11. Obama has been assailed by conservative critics who say the decision to close the facility within a year will lead to putting many of those terrorists back on the streets. Of course, in a recent interview, we covered it again last night on the B-side, former real president Darth Cheney, an architect of the GWAT, in his first post-White House interview, criticized the decision, of course, as reckless. And actually, I believe he said, hundreds of thousands are going to die in a terror attack if you try and do anything to dismantle the global war on terror. But what about the enduring struggle? And we'll get to that. Obama has been assailed by conservative critics who say the decision to close the facility within a year will lead to putting many of those terrorists back on the streets. In a recent interview, former Vice President Dick Cheney, an architect of the Bush administration's war on terror, criticized the decision as reckless. In an interview with Politico.com, Cheney accused the Obama administration of following campaign rhetoric on Guantanamo and warned that the new president's policies could put the country at greater risk of a new attack. Skipping down in this Washington Post article about Obama meeting with 9/11 victims' family members, one 9/11 activist who declined to be identified talking about the meeting said fireworks are likely at the gathering because it will include both relatives who oppose and those who support Obama's plan to close Guantanamo Bay. There's been some noise that family members don't like the idea and others do, so this is a chance to discuss that, the activist said. I harbor the small hope that other more important questions would be raised. But again, didn't see any updates on the news, but we'll keep you posted. That's just the top story on this last posting we're going to go over on episode 110 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's, of course, the Obamasiah meets 9/11, taxes, and the Buy American remorse. We linked up a couple weeks ago an article from radicalpantheist.blogspot.com, Obama and 9/11. That was part one. We also have part two. However, McClatchy, of course, scrambling after Daschle's fall in tax controversy, President Barack Obama scrambled to regain control of his political message Tuesday after a series of tax and vetting scandals forced one of his most important nominees to withdraw and raised questions about the new president's central campaign pledge to change politics as usual. There are links to the Washington Post, Raw Story, Raw Replay, ThinkProgress.org, Time Magazine, and Infowars.com, all noting another day, another Obama nominee with tax problems. See, it's not really a problem. It's only a problem when it gets found out. They know that taxes, for the most part, are a bunch of bullshit. So they don't bother doing it. And, you know, they hire some migrant workers as their housekeepers, but they don't really care. As is the case in most of these things, the powers that be, of course, create the crises, but then blame us. So in the case of, you know, some of the environmental ideas and resources, they suppress the technologies, but then blame us for just going too far. Now we have to tighten our belts. We don't get to throw the multi-million dollar Super Bowl bailout Bank of America parties. So through all those links, you can read about Tom Daschle, and you can, of course, read about all his connections to Big Pharma. So that's exactly why he was going to be installed in the HHS spot. Whoops. As setbacks hit, Obama calls in the networks. That's from the DPA. And of course, when you're having trouble, what do? You go to the media. Of course, owned by a handful of multinational corporations, staffed by the same people from the Council on Foreign Relations and otherwise, all giving the same basic message within and through each other. It spills down, Mockingbird style. So, of course, as the setbacks hit, You got to go to TV. That's, of course, how and why they don't want to let the transition, the big digital transition, go through, because they're not going to knock off millions of people from the propaganda TV tit. But I'm digressing. Hope, as I mentioned at the very top of the show, is flickering. So says the ACLU, and you got to give it to them. This from Raw Story: the American Civil Liberties Union, which has generally been harshly critical of President George W. Bush and praiseworthy of President Barack Obama, has fired a torpedo across the Obama bow. Hope is flickering, Romero from ACLU.org said in a statement. Quote, the Obama administration's position is not change. It's more of the same. This represents a complete turnaround and undermining of the restoration of the rule of law. The new American administration shouldn't be complicit in hiding the abuses of its predecessors. This, of course, all relates to Obama endorsing Bush secrecy on torture and rendition, with a link to the press release from ACLU.org. And again, the longer story from Raw Story. McClatchy has an op-ed, and this is their title. Surely this isn't what Obama meant when he vowed change. One from Reuters. And this, of course, gets to the buyer's remorse, the Buy American remorse. Obama says U.S. can't send a protectionist trade message. Obama said this last Tuesday he didn't want to send a protectionist message on world trade and would look at altering Buy American language in an economic stimulus bill coming out of Congress. Quote, I think it would be a mistake at a time when worldwide trade is declining for us to start sending a message that somehow we're just looking after ourselves and not concerned with world trade, Obama said appropriately enough on the Fox television network. The funny, bitter, funny note is perhaps they want to downplay the Buy American notion, one, for its face value. You know, we don't want to be protectionists. We don't want to be isolationists, as they accused Ron Paul of being during the campaigns. But they also probably want to downplay and alter the Buy American language, probably because we don't fucking make anything. That's probably the problem. Raw Replay notes that, of course, noted from Rachel Maddow, the latest darling of the controlled left media, that Obama has, of course, a crush on Republicans. It is bipartisanship. It is change. It's just not the change you thought it was going to be. From Danger Room, Obama to bring nuke labs to the Pentagon. The Albuquerque Journal has the real nuke scoop. The Obama administration is considering a plan to fold the U.S. nuclear weapons complex into the Department of Defense. The link to the Albuquerque Journal sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't. They've got the subscription block going on. But again, this is that connection of folding things into the DOD. We, of course, have recently noted all the connections between Obama and NASA, from the strange thing in the inauguration to, of course, space weapons, the coming space war, having the military supply NASA with more rockets, putting those guys together, and now bringing nuclear labs into the DOD fold. I have to say, as we're talking about the DOD and talking about Gates and talking about an article from the Associated Press, Obama set to continue Pakistan strikes, killing people, killing civilians with drones piloted by young kids, video game style. So, of course, you know, that happened 2 days after he was in office. He also preserved rendition 2 days after taking office. This, according to Raw Story, as well as timesonline.co.uk, as well as whitehouse.gov press release. 2 days after taking the helm of a country ready for change, after 8 years of George W. Bush, President Obama has allowed one controversial GWAT tactic to remain in place: rendition. Despite frequent condemnation of the practice around the world, rendition the euphemism for secret capture, transportation, and detention, if not more, of suspected terrorists to foreign prisons in countries that cooperate with the U.S. Rendition remains in the CIA playbook thanks to a January 22nd executive order issued by President Obama, with a link for you there. You can read it yourself. As we were talking about Pakistan strikes, as I get more heated, as time starts to run out, I go into lightning round and I just vent it all out. I can't mention Robert Gates anymore without reminding you of the story we hit a couple weeks ago of Robert Gates as the, quote, designated successor during the inauguration. The unelected head of the military hiding out in a military installation during the inauguration in case Washington was decapitated. Robert Gates was the designated successor. Again, more connections to the phony war on terror. Obama's Al-Qaeda initiative began months before his election. That's from worldtribune.com. However, more importantly, I think from thinkprogress.org, at least on the language front. And again, we're talking about media and memes and ideas and art imitating life, imitating politics. Obama abandons war on terror catchphrase. Again, from Think Progress, the Associated Press notes that only since taking office on January 20th, only once since taking office on January 20th, has Obama used the phrase war on terror, which was always on the lips of Bush. Obama has instead more broadly referenced the enduring struggle against terrorism and extremism. CSIS national security analyst Anthony Cordesman notes that Bush's phrase became associated in the minds of many people outside the U.S., and particularly in places where the countries are largely Islamic and Arab, as being anti-Islamic and anti-Arab. Indeed, a Pentagon-funded study last year recommended that the U.S. do away with the terminology, as the strategy behind it was, quote, not successful in undermining Al-Qaeda's capabilities. The flashback link to July of 2007, U.S. military urged to revise their tarnished brand, and more from the RAND Corporation, RAND.org. One from Salon.com and Glenn Greenwald, the defense cut falsehood from the Washington Post and Kagan. Of course, it's slick. It's slick, slick propaganda everywhere. A quick mention, we always, of course, have to mention Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, who, of course, as Blagojevich was going down in flames, said, you should fire that guy, too, if I'm getting impeached. Which I also made the note that Rahm Emanuel doesn't seem like the kind of guy that politically you want to fuck with. What, you know, with him sending dead fish and stabbing tables and enemies list, virtually. Let's hear what Rahm Emanuel says about if you're on a no-fly list. You got no gun. But as I look, I don't have time. We don't have time to hear from the former Israeli soldier about the Second Amendment. The last few headlines posted up under this 9/11 taxes and the Buy American remorse of the Obama-siah. Oregon Rep. DeFazio says the White House is spending more time with the GOP. You can watch that video on Raw Replay. Lax security around Obama alarms some VIP donors. That's from the Washington Post, and that's disturbing. Of course, always noting what Fletcher Prouty notes about the JFK assassination, Fletcher Prouty being the real guy that the Donald Sutherland character Mr. X is based on in JFK. Real, high-up, military-industrial complex guy. He says all you got to do is take away the security of a president. And that's what happened November 22nd. Lax security around Obama alarms some VIP donors. Again, from the Washington Post. From threat level, Colorado man faces 10 years for Obama assassination email. However, from Politico.com, new Treasury front man, Federal Reserve puppet Geithner enlists some of his Goldman Sachs lobbyist buddies as top aides. Again, this is starting to get quite repetitive in talking about they worked for Goldman Sachs, and now they're a lobbyist, and now they're at the Treasury, and they were at Raytheon, but now they're a lobbyist, and then they're going to go to the Federal Reserve, and then they're at Goldman Sachs, and then they're at a on and on and on, the revolving door. They go to the private sector. They come back to a new administration. And, of course, this administration is three-quarters Clintonites, I believe. So, Geithner bringing in more Goldman Sachs banksters for the change you're going to get. Obama's brother was arrested for weed. That's from the AFP. Obama's Angels of Hope from Alex Constantine, that running down the shit list of the criminal cabinet. Another one from Alex Constantine that I haven't had time to dive through. But basically, the way he puts it, the entire fascist U.S. game plan exposed in a single minor Obama appointment. And of course, when you follow the dots, follow the trail, what that means. Perhaps we'll go more into that later. An interesting, strange one about Obama's head being put on a white body on some of the cardboard cutouts, you know, that you like to take your picture with, the president. It's just his head and his hands are white, and you can hear an interesting story from NPR. Obama 1260 shuts down. This noted from the Washington Post. Howard Kurtz, of course, their sort of entertainment, Hollywood, media spotlight writer. It's one of those pages where it's little bits of media. So while he's babbling about Caroline Kennedy and Blago and silly Sarah Palin and how Obama got elected.com, the bottom note, liberal flame out. President Obama may be riding high in Washington, but Obama 1260 is not. The area's only progressive talk station is changing formats, dropping such syndicated liberal hosts such as Ed Schultz, Stephanie Miller, and Bill Press in favor of financial news. But I suppose that's appropriate. Obama and the Trilateral Commission endgame from AugustReview.com. And finally from CNN, unhappy voters jam Capitol Hill phone lines. Why? It's all the bailout. It's the clamoring for a solution. Problem, reaction, solution. They cause the problem to generate the reaction out of us. So we'll clamor, please do something. And they do. And they will. So whether it's the predictive programming that we went over earlier in 20-year-old episodes of G.I. Joe, where a shadowy terrorist organization named Cobra offers you a financial bailout because your economy has collapsed and your money isn't worth anything, come to the new Cobra currency. Those are just some of the media and memes we've gone over and will continue to go over on MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to look now at the interesting list of folks coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Like I said, I can kind of tell what's an interesting story and what's got legs and what's interesting to those somewhat higher up. By who comes to the website and how they get there and what they Googled and what they linked on and where they're working. So, as I've said before, I'll lay it out for you again if you're new to this. Using the stat counter at the bottom of the page, you know, when you see the hit counter on your site, it keeps track of how many people have visited your site. When you install that on your website, you get the back end to see who's visiting. So if you're running a business or whatever, you can see how to tailor it and where you're getting hits from. And it's interesting and fun, and there's maps and yada yada. I started to keep track of some of the interesting hits I would get, and now I do it every week. And it's kind of fun. In a scary way. So here's the list, much longer than last week, of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. First, it's of course the Department of Homeland Security out of Springfield, Virginia. We also had the National Institutes of Health out of Arlington, Virginia. They were, of course, reading about Barry Jennings, the late Barry Jennings, key witness to WTC-7 explosions, dead mysteriously at age 53. And again, thanks to whatreallyhappened.com for posting up my story about the late Barry Jennings. And of course, you can again see him in Loose Change talking about being in Building 7 and that whole bizarre story. However, moving on to SUNY College of Technology, that's of course out of Johnson City, New York, or at least their ISP is. Someone there at SUNY Googled United States to child policy. Now, the first of many mentions and searches and Googles for Captain Jonathan Bayless, That is, again, the latest mysterious death from Minon Air Force Base, home of the rogue B-52s, home of the sleeping nuclear guards, home of the lost and missent fuses to Taiwan, sexual abuse, ICBMs dead in a ditch, and on, and the long and growing death list. So, Garmin International out of Salem, Oregon. Someone there Googled Jonathan Bayless. Patriot Media and Communications out of Whitefish, Montana Googled Captain Jonathan Bayless. Lens Crafters out of Cincinnati, Ohio Googled free ebook Behold the Pale Horse. They're, of course, going to get William Cooper's Behold a Pale Horse. Lockheed Martin out of King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. We're reading about Captain Jonathan Bayless. DoD Network Information Center out of Colorado, United States Air Force Academy, Googled Captain Jonathan Bayless. The Central Intelligence Agency out of Fairfax, Virginia, and more likely Langley, reading about another Minot Air Force Base death. TVGuide.com out of New York City, Googled Captain Jonathan Bayless. Lockheed, DOD, CIA, and TV Guide, all reading about Captain Jonathan Bayless. Kaiser Permanente out of San Jose, California, Googled Leon Lagant, Alex Ansari, February 2008. Leon Lagant, of course, being the seer, or prestidigitator, if you will, who, of course, like folks like Gerald Celente, another futurist, see strange days indeed, to say the very least. Again, the Department of Defense, DOD/QOLnet, out of Hampton, Virginia, they Googled Jonathan Bayless, Minot. The Newspaper Association of America out of Arlington Googled Jonathan Bayless. The Headquarters USAISC out of Las Cruces, New Mexico Googled Jonathan Bayless, Minot, North Dakota. The DOD Network Information Center out of Lexington Park, Maryland Googled PSYOP in Grenada. The University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, they were reading about and hopefully listening and picking their jaw up off the floor after they watched Cobra Commander offer you a financial bailout from a real episode of G.I. Joe from 1985. State of Nebraska, Office of the CIO out of Lincoln, Nebraska, Googled updated September 11th updates, and that redundant search brought them right to MediaMonarchy.com. Mayo Foundation out of Rochester, Minnesota, Googled What's Davos Prophecy? And of course, we went over it last night. Water bankruptcy is the prophecy. Arizona State Government out of Phoenix, Arizona, Googled FEMA Exercise June 2009, Austin, Texas. Could that be the FEMA Northrop Grumman National Level Exercise? I do not know yet. And last on the list, certainly not least, our good friends at the Drug Enforcement Administration visiting Media Monarchy from Arlington, Virginia. And of course, they just got kicked out of Bolivia because President Evo Morales says they contribute to drug running. So get some of that. That's going to do it. Episode 110 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's February 6th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Connecting the dots, trying to put the puzzle together. You know how to get in touch with me. I appreciate you for listening to the show and sharing it, spreading it far and wide. Let me remind you about good things coming up soon on MediaMonarchy.com. And again, let me remind you about the MediaMonarchy.com shirts I've got linked up for you on the top right of the page. Get a shirt, tell them where you've been by wearing a t-shirt, and help support me and MediaMonarchy.com. And I'll keep doing it. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Every person in town to apologize for my telemarketing scam. I'm sorry. If you can find it in your heart to forgive me, then $1 to Sorry Dude, 742 Evergreen Terrace, Springfield. You have the power.
whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.